Your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
And welcome to Friday afternoon, everyone. Here we are in the Allstate Showcase Studio along Michigan Avenue on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Andrea Haines is in the studio. She's the editor of Blue Sky Innovation and comes by most Fridays. We'll talk with Andrea in just a sec. Well, actually, Andrea, welcome. Nice to see you again.
You too, Steve.
A little bit later, the next segment, in fact, we'll talk to Adam Ochstein. The Washington Post has a story out today about the number of people who have protested in the past 2 years. So in the era of Donald Trump, what percentage of Americans do you think have gone out to protest?
Gosh, of Americans, not just like in our fair city. I don't know. 20%.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Is it 20%?
20%, which is huge. One in five people. And, you know, a pro-Trump, anti-Trump, but one in five people. Also, 44% 50 years or older.
Oh, wow.
And yeah. A significant number have more than $100,000 in annual income. So we'll talk about social work in the workplace with Adam. But I want to talk with you about cows and Fitbits.
Love the story.
So, you know, agriculture's huge. Obviously, technology would love to move into the ag business even more than it is. I think it probably is quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And now there's this company selling essentially sort of Fitbits for cows.
I know, that's some great branding, right? Fitbits for cows. So what is it? It's like artificial.
As long as you have it in the right spot. Because yes. If you're trying to sell us Fitbits for cows, that's not a good idea.
Could be a bit much.
Right.
So this is an artificial intelligence system that's nicknamed Ida, and it gives farmers alerts when their cows are chewing cud or feeling sick. And it's basically a tracker, an activity tracker.
And what it can tell when they are ready for some coupling, things like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. And it's important to know that if you're breeding cows.
And so, but they can do this just by seeing how they're actually measuring how the cows move.
Yes, measuring the cow's activity, you know, and how they move. So it's things that, you know, the story is also just, it's an interesting cultural story, right? You've got like old farmers in here who are like, this is the gift God gave me that I can look and see,
let me read that
80
quote.
Feet. Yeah.
It's a guy, a farmer in Georgia, and he's saying, look, I don't need this fancy stuff. He said, the good Lord said, this is what you can do. I can't draw, paint, or anything else, but I can watch cows. And he said, I can look at my cows and tell them what's wrong, or I can look in their eye and see if there's something wrong. Problem is, if you have a herd of cattle and they're out in a pasture somewhere, it's a hard time to get FaceTime with each of them, I would imagine.
Yes, I would imagine, too. And it does sound like it just lets them zero in on things. And, you know, what everybody hopes with this kind of thing is that it starts to predict things, maybe even before some of those physical signs are there that the farmer might notice.
But this could be big money for the tech industry, right, if they move in. But it seems to me, because reading the article, they started talked about how innovation and technology is trying to move into agriculture. But it seems to me like agriculture has been a pretty early adopter in a lot of this.
Yeah, I know we've talked about some of the things with tractors and things like that. Certainly things with growing anything.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of sensor activity and things like that happening.
I mean, there are guys on the tractor who don't steer it anymore, right? It just follows GPS through the field.
Yep.
All right, so we'll follow that. Fitbits for cows.
Yes.
What's next?
Artificial intelligence. Coming.
Hey, you know, with the YouTube shooting, I think that was last week, wasn't it? Was it the end of last week? Or was it earlier this week?
Isn't time it terrible? Is a flat circle, Steve. Do leaks even matter?
I don't think they do anymore. But we've talked a lot about this woman who went to YouTube. She was a content creator on her own and built up this animosity toward YouTube and just opened fire. But I want to talk a little bit about what's behind that, not her case individually, but we've touched on this from time to time. This whole relationship between YouTube, which is the number one social media site for us in this country, and the people who sort of put the stuff on there that makes them rich. The idea is that they get rich, too.
Or at least make a living for their efforts,
but
right?
There are a lot of people.
Or a side gig, you know.
But there are a lot of people who, from out of the woodwork, under the table, have made a career out of putting stuff up on YouTube.
Absolutely. We've profiled people that do that. And like, as we were discussing, we follow people that do that. And it's been hard times for them as YouTube has tried to crack down on, you know, they're getting complaints from advertisers if those ads get served onto content that, you know, the advertiser doesn't believe in.
Yeah, so if you are selling dish soap, and all of a sudden your dish soap ad is showing up on a white supremacist video, that's bad. You
Problem.
Don't want that.
Yes.
And YouTube will lose the dish soap account, so they've tried to figure out a way to narrow the places where these ads go.
They have. And unfortunately, the way they've done it has created a lot of frustrated content creators who now feel like they cannot make a living anymore. And this showed up in the complaints of this shooter, but it reflects concerns of a lot of creators.
It's something that's real out there, right?
It's real.
She's not a fringe. She's fringe in that she took violent action. But
in a lot of ways, but in terms of her core complaint, that is shared by a lot of people. I mean, I watch some YouTube vloggers who do things about like home decor and home organizing, things that are very non-controversial. And they've spoken about problems that they've had, you know, with just not being able to monetize the content the way they used to. And for them, it's, you know, it might be their main gig, it might be a side gig, but they spend, even though it's quasi-professional, I would say, they spend a lot of hours on it. And they need to be able to get a little bit of money out of that.
So I'm wondering who's responsible here, because it's YouTube's ball, right? I mean, and if YouTube wants to set the rules, the people, the vloggers have benefited by, I don't want to say exploiting, but by taking advantage of the opportunity. And YouTube has benefited from it too. But in the end, it's still kind of YouTube's decision. They don't have contracts with these people.
No, they don't have contracts. But YouTube does depend on them for their content. Like, they're not, YouTube's not paying them. You know, it's kind of like the content creator has all the responsibility of making any money out of it whatsoever. And YouTube wouldn't be much without this free content. So, you know, they have some responsibility to the creators, I would say. And they've got to figure out what that balance is.
I wonder. So, yeah, I don't, you know, my daughter has people who she watches every day, and she's laughing uproariously, loves it, you know.
Yeah.
And you said you watch people sometimes, maybe even every day.
Yep.
So I'm not tuned into that. I'm not aware of that. When I think of YouTube, I'm trying to find a song I like or some goofy video that someone's talking about, but not daily original programming.
Yeah,
but you're saying that's what they live.
I have a couple. I'll give them a shout out. I don't know them personally. But there's one called How Jen Does It out of Michigan. That's a great home organizing one. There's one called Migrate Challenge out of New Jersey. That's another great, just like home life, home organizing one. To me, it's kind of women's magazine content. You know,
but
what we used to
without
think
the,
of,
but
in
without
terms
the
of,
sort of the infrastructure of the women's magazine behind them.
Right. I mean, they don't. You know, there's this different relationship with advertising that we've just discussed. But you know, it's not like they're paid writers or paid content creators. They're making these videos in some cases after a day's work while they're literally cooking dinner for their family. They're putting videos together. I enjoy it. It's kind of like watching a cooking show where you kind of seeing it and, you know, getting it into your muscle memory really does teach you something.
I wonder, because I think of the food blogs then, because I like to cook and find recipes. And, you know, now you can't find someone posting a recipe without 6 pages of how they found the rutabaga or something, right?
Yeah.
I just want the recipe, damn it.
I think you're going to get hooked on one sooner or later. You're going to find a YouTube channel that you like.
All right, maybe that'll be my goal for the weekend. Andrea Haynes, what's in Red Eye?
So Red Eye is C2E2, so it's got the Nerd Invasion with the big comics expo here this weekend.
I'm glad I'm leaving town.
Yep, well.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Bertrand, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
All right, it is 12:22 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Adam Ockstein's in the studio. He's the CEO of Stratix. Adam comes by from time to time. Welcome back, friend. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you as well, Steve.
All right, tell me what Stratix does.
We provide HR software and services for small to mid-sized businesses, primarily restaurant and hospitality.
Especially restaurant and places that are sort of dispersed,
yeah,
right?
Distributed workforce, yeah.
Okay. All right. So we want to talk a little bit about something you've decided to do with your company coming up later this month. And before that, Bennett Wakenight, the producer, found this story in the Washington Post today. They did a survey of people who've protested since 2016. Now, I don't know if you were in the green room, but I asked Andrea what percentage of Americans have been active in a protest, and she nailed it, 20%.
That's it?
Oh, I think that's high. You know, 1 in 5 Americans has been out in a protest in the last 2 years?
I guess that is pretty. That's a good number. I was hoping it'd be higher.
Yeah, well, that's because you've been out in all of them, apparently.
I think so. I think I might have been.
44% of those protesters are 50 and older.
That's great.
And here's the one that caught me. 36% earn more than $100,000 a year. Right?
Right.
That surprises me.
Yeah.
I'm thinking protesters are the down and outs who, you know, want theirs. And that shows that this isn't the case so much.
Yeah, and I think I'm surprised that there's not more kids.
Right. Well, and so is it a good thing? Is it a good thing that the crowds are older, or a bad thing? I wonder.
I think it might be a bad thing.
Really, because it's the hippies are still out there.
Yeah, you want the kids.
Right. Well, the kids are certainly stepping up.
100%. Very proud of them.
There was the school walkout. There were the marches. I think it was last weekend or the weekend before.
Union Park.
And so you've taken this to your workplace in an interesting way. Explain this for me.
Yeah, so we have a StratX Serves committee that basically does volunteer work and give back part of the organization. That, and I brought it up to the committee that I'd like to completely voluntary organize anyone who wants to participate on April 20th, not a school walkout since we're not in school,
right,
but a company walkout at 10 a.m. and anyone wants to wear orange can march up and down Michigan Avenue with us at 10 a.m.
And this is school violence.
Yeah, gun violence.
Gun violence. And there are, this is coinciding with marches around the country. April 20th is the date chosen.
Yeah, this is the anniversary of Columbine.
And you guys are going to march up and down Michigan Avenue?
We're going to probably bang on your windows around 10 o'clock.
Do it. I'll give you a little time. But not joining others, just the StratX march.
Yeah, those who want to participate.
This is just a complete...
No judgment if you don't.
Yeah, not an impromptu march, but just doing it on your own.
Yeah.
Okay, this could be, as a CEO, this could be difficult territory, right?
You know, one of the things...
Are people going to feel like, well, clearly the boss is behind this, so I better do it?
I hope not. I mean, that's not our culture, but I mean, I get it. But one of the things I guess I get as a privilege is being the CEO.
Tell me about that meeting.
it was basically an online meeting where we communicate like kids. Now we have Slack. So it was on an online Slack, and I said, I got an idea. And, you know, I kind of got my hand slapped by a couple of people saying, you can't do that. There's people on both sides of the aisle. And I said, I get that, but this is what I want to do. Let's find a way to do it without offending people.
And so you're confident you have?
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, like, we have good discourse in the office around all different political issues. We allow that. I think as long as you act like an adult, it's good, and it's good to get a different perspective.
So this is about other companies too, right? What do you suggest other CEOs in your situation do?
I'm hoping that not only the kids are walking out, but I'm hoping that companies are following our suit. Anyone listening, join us on April 20th at 10 a.m., march down Michigan Avenue in orange T-shirts.
Do you think you can keep...
Hopefully T-shirts, not sweatshirts.
Yeah, well, don't bet on that. Do you think you can keep the march up for 2 hours? Because I'd love to see you go by the window here at noon.
Maybe we'll come back as special.
A reprise?
Yes.
A reprise of the march? All right. And the response so far at the workplace has been pretty understanding.
Yeah, I think
so. Do you think you would know if it wasn't?
No.
Right. Well, that's the trick, isn't it?
Yeah. And I'm sure we are offending people. I don't know, but if we are, I hopefully they'd feel comfortable enough to talk to me about it.
Right. Is this spreading, or have you, as a CEO of a company that works with clients, have you communicated this with your client companies as well?
No, I try to keep that a little bit separate. My personal Twitter is probably not one that I want people on different sides of the aisle to probably follow me.
And so, you can advocate for one thing in your workplace, but and then protect your relationships outside the workplace.
So.
Adam Ockstein, the CEO of StratX. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Steve. Always a pleasure.
I'll see you in a couple weeks.
Yes.
Outside the window.
Banging on them.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
All right, this is where I do my Jim Nance imitation, right? It's Jim Nance, a tradition unlike any other. Matt McEntee is in the studio. He is the CEO of Green Golf Partners and a partner of the Biz Lunch. On often, how are you?
Hey, Steve, how are you?
So,
great.
Nice to see you again. We've talked probably, three or four times.
Absolutely.
Since I've been doing this show.
Yep.
So the Masters, you know, gets people itching to go out there.
Big time.
I want to talk a little bit about that in a second, but I would imagine this cold weather already is being felt at the golf courses, isn't it? I mean, people might have been out already by now.
Oh, definitely. Typically, this time of the year, people would have been playing golf. And I think cold spring, and everybody's got, you know, a real strong desire to get out there watching the Masters. If you live in Chicago and you got the itch, where are you going to go?
Well, that's the thing. So, you know, I used to watch college basketball, the tournament, then you go out to your driveway and shoot, right?
Yeah.
So you watch the Masters, and then you want to go out and play.
Right, exactly.
And
I do.
And are there courses up and running?
Yeah, I think almost everybody, certainly in the Chicagoland area, is open and ready for play, and probably right. There's a lot of guys sitting at the counter today
like the Maytag repairman.
Right, they're watching the Masters, wondering if anybody will walk in the door.
I want to talk to you a little bit about that. And the story this year is Tiger Woods, I guess.
Yep.
I'm just amazed because you and I, when we talked last time, I think we or one other time, we've talked about the exciting group of golfers that are out there, the Jordan Spieth, Jason Day, these guys who, you know, seem to really like each other,
yep.
Seem to be good guys, and they're fun to watch. Well, here comes Tiger Woods. Now, Ticket IQ says the average price to attend the Masters with a weekly badge this year is just over $7,600, which is double last year's average price.
Right.
And it's all about Tiger Woods.
It's all about Tiger.
TV ratings. Nielsen says network viewership is up 93% on average during the first four events that Woods has finished in contention.
Yeah.
Why is it that people are still so enamored with Tiger Woods? I mean, I shouldn't put it that way. I understand why people are enamored with Tiger Woods, but why is it that so many more people are watching with Woods than they're not watching with these other younger guys?
Well, I think he draw, you know, there was a perception when he first came out that he would add more golfers, and I think what he ended up doing is, I mean, he did that to some degree, but he added a lot of non-golf spectators. He was unique, different. He kind of did everything that golfers didn't do. He lifted weights. He got big. He had, Swedish princess wives.
Right.
And then, you know, when he got on the pedestal, he had a bullseye. He was the guy that everybody all of a sudden started to kind of scrutinize. And then his crash is well known. And now,
he could have handled it better himself, too.
Oh, right? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, he's actually had like three or four chances to handle it better.
But so here we are now, having, as a country, ripped this guy down.
Yeah.
And now, what, is it just that we've got our arms open, want to welcome him back, or do we want to watch him fail again?
No, I think we want to welcome him back, and I give him credit, because he's done something that I haven't seen in his career, and that is he's shown humility. You know, he's shown that he's human and that he's, not this immortal cyborg golfer.
Right.
And I think there's a lot of guys between 45 and 55 that grew up with him. He's 42. And they want to see him kind of put these young guys in their place. And the young guys, you brought up a point. The young guys all like each other. They go on vacation together. There's actually a lot of criticism of that, saying, why aren't these guys tougher?
Right.
And when he played, I mean, he was the Terminator. He wasn't shaking hands. He wasn't nice to the reporters. If you were on the first tee with him on the final round, he was, definitely giving you a little bit of the voodoo.
Right.
So all of a sudden, four back surgeries and a car crash and opioids and whatever. And suddenly he's the fan favorite.
All right, so people are going to be tuning in, right?
Yeah.
There's going to be a big audience for the Masters
right.
this weekend. You at Green Golf run and manage dozens of golf courses,
right?
Including Kemper Lakes,
right?
Where there's a big LPGA event this summer, right?
Yeah, the KPMG.
So how do you take this audience this weekend and put them on the Kemper Lakes golf course this summer?
Well, I think of it, a lot of it is, Tiger is good for the game. You know, he gets people interested, and it's our job to keep them interested. And we have to do that in a variety of ways, including just, managing the social media between now and then and creating some excitement for that event, which I think the PGA has done a great job. The Jackie Ensley and her team have done a great job. But it is Tiger. And he's always been different. And the challenge that we have always faced is how do we take his popularity and translate into something that helps, the grassroots part of the business, the guys that are running the tournaments, the other tournaments. I mean, I'll give you two great examples. The best is the Valspar, right? He finished in the top 10. He almost won. He finished second. They've never had gates like that.
Right.
The guy shows up. I mean, if he'd show up and play in the practice round of the KPMG, we'd fill the golf course.
It is amazing.
It's a Michael Jordan thing. I don't know,
All right. So there's that.
Yeah.
But let's talk about golf in general. You're managing these courses around Illinois,
right.
Florida, Michigan. When we first started talking, I think one of the things I asked you was why it was that so many golf courses were for sale. Has that eased it all, or is it still the case?
It's still the case. I mean, there isn't a day that goes by that I don't see something pop up on the internet locally, nationally. I think there's still a lot of golf courses that are struggling.
But Tiger Woods was supposed to bring in all these new golfers.
Right, right. And they didn't show up.
It's not his fault, clearly, but yeah.
No.
And so what's keeping people away?
Well, it's a hard game, you know. So one of the things is when you come into it, it can be intimidating. It's not like picking up a basketball and going to your local court, right?
Right.
And certainly not, even though there are really great physio benefits to it, if you're willing to walk and do all those things, it's a very wonderful health related sport, but it's hard to learn. The cost entry, I think, intimidates people. And I don't know that we've done as good a job in the last 20 years making it, you know, reflecting to the general public how much fun it is. You know, I mean, I played down at Maravitz, I still call it Waveland, but Maravitz, about 3 weeks ago on a 40, or maybe 5 weeks ago on a 45 degree day on the lakefront. And it was just a great experience. I mean, it's the best. You know, there's a great book called A Good Walk Spoiled. There's nothing about a good walk on the golf course. We just have to do a better job of making it more social. The Europeans, that's what they've done. They've said, okay, people like to compete, but that's about 10% of the population of
golfers.
Right,
I just want to go. I'm never going to compete on a golf course. I just want to go and have fun.
Right. Well,
I haven't yet.
Go to Topgolf. Come to our course. We are good. Our whole thing is, you know, people laugh, but our whole thing is making golf fun again. And we try, you know, I spend the winter going to the trade shows, and I don't spend the time looking for new clubs or new golf balls. I look at, you know, can we put on a drive-in movie at the club? Are there non-golf things that we can do to get people out to get a fish hook in them so that they'll enjoy it? The junior golf, the amazing thing that I'm seeing right now, Steve, is there's a generation of golfers that are missing, and we have all. It used to be I started golf because my dad brought me.
Right.
Maybe
right.
You did the same. Now we have the kids who watch Rory, and then they bring the parents. So we're getting the parent, the non-golfer is now the parent, and the kid wants to be the golfer.
Matt McEntee, the CEO of Green Golf Partners. Great to talk to you again.
Yeah, you too.
Can't wait. We didn't even bring up Ireland.
No, and I'm going again in the fall, playing in some senior events. I can't wait.
We'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Take care, Steve.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
This is the Wintrust Business Minute.
Got a minute? Good, because I've got the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing the news, providing input, and breaking down the stories that matter to the world of business. Many people have their criticisms about the U.S. correction systems, but Adovo is trying to chip away at that larger problem with education. The Chicago company has raised over $11 million from various investors to bring their tablet-based education to jails and prisons across the country, where their goal is a purposeful rehabilitation. It's an excellent example of finding an area of need and creating a solution for it. Way to go, Adovo. And Oak Street Real Estate Capital also deserves a shout out. After offering up $2 billion to buy out properties from the city of Hartford, they're looking to take over various office buildings, healthcare facilities, and transit properties in that area. Why? It's a much-needed buyout for the city that is strapped for cash, looking to avoid bankruptcy and reducing their overall debt load. Maybe Chicago could take a few notes on reducing debt. Tune in tomorrow for all of your up-to-date business news on WGN Radio.
Back to Steve Bertrand and the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
Our number of the week this week is 82. According to the Washington Post, you can actually put a dollar figure on how much we're worth to Facebook. So Facebook collected $82 in advertising for each member in North America last year. Each member was responsible for $82, if you can figure it out that way. If you look at everyone around the world, it's about $20 per member. The number of the week is 82. All right, Philip Weiss is in the studio. He's the president of Work Right Solutions, and his company's in charge of keeping other companies out of trouble. Thanks for coming by.
Good to see you.
All right, we're going to call this the Scott Foster segment. But before that, earlier in the program, Adam Oxtein was here, the CEO of StratX, and we were talking about how he initiated and will lead his workers in a gun violence protest coming up later this month. I thought of you right away.
Yeah.
Because that's thin ice.
Well,
it's turbulent waters, let's say,
you know,
that.
It's something to at least be thoughtful regarding in terms of, will employees feel compelled to join the march? irrespective of the goal or the political outcome you're looking to achieve.
He says no, but he also says he knows he doesn't know.
That's right. Yeah. And so it's not as though there's a judge is going to come in later on and say that was an illegal march or an illegal expectation by the employer. The real problem is that employees might just feel compelled to participate.
Right.
And this area of law is constantly changing in terms of employees' political views and outside of work activities not being something that we can take into consideration.
All right. As I said, this is the Scott Foster segment. Scott Foster is he's an accountant, I think.
Maybe he was an accountant. We don't know what the future holds.
Now he's just a celebrity, man. And so he was the guy who was the emergency goalie for the Blackhawks last week, staved. I think 6 or 7 shots preserved the win. It was 6-2. But you started thinking then about how companies need to sort of have their Scott Fosters out there or be prepared, have their emergency employees.
Yeah, and I'd like to take credit for the coining the phrase, you know, sort of, where's my Scott Foster?
Yeah, that's good.
I heard it from a couple of clients who, because clearly everyone focuses on the Hawks, and the fact that this guy came from the business world, now it's resonating back in the business world, which is to say what the Hawks did, what the NHL requires, really provides a blueprint in a way for what a lot of companies should be thinking about in these emergency situations.
Because companies will find themselves in emergencies where key employees leave and they've got to make do, or they've got to have a farm system. But tell me the story about the guy who kept writing emails in his former employee's name.
Yeah, so obviously we learned from the tragedies of many companies whose stories are strewn about in litigation and in the front pages, one of which was a company where the president was so rattled by the sudden departure of his client relations manager, a gentleman who was so trusted by the clients and customers. It's been there for really decades. And the president didn't know how to inform clients, didn't want to rattle the cage. So he said nothing. In fact, to your point, he kept communicating with these clients in the email system under the email address of his former client relations manager, even to the point that he kept the guy's nickname.
Goobs.
So it was like the ghost of Goobs was communicating until one of these clients was having lunch with Goobs and received one of these emails.
Which points out one of your suggestions when something does happen is to reach out right away to the clients and say, hey, I want to tell you, quote unquote, first.
Right, and don't overpromise. So that's either people are in a state of shock, they freeze up, they don't communicate, or they go overboard, Steve, and they'll say, you know what? We're going to meet every deadline. We'll exceed every expectation. You want to be open. You want to show your commitment.
They've set their own trap then, in a way.
That's right. And in this case, it was no communication. It can also be over-communication.
You can't really have a farm team or a shadow government for every position.
That's right. And that's one reason why that communication matters. So part of it is what you do internally. Cross-training people is always a great idea, but you have to start thinking about that months and years in advance and helping your employees know that we're giving you opportunities to share your skills, not because we're putting your job at risk if you leave, but because we want to protect everybody. And you're right, you also need basically what the Hawks have, which is an outside bench. We like the idea of thinking about consultants, not just temps, but people who actually have expertise. You can test them. You can bring them in on projects. If you need them, they're there.
So the consultant then might one day be a full-time employee.
Might. And in the meantime, a lot of people, whether they're retired, stay-at-home parents, looking for work, they want that opportunity to do a project. Get them acclimated. These goalies, they're not professionals, but they know how to tend the goal.
Oh, Scott Foster is. Philip Weiss is the CEO of WorkRight Solutions. Where do people find more out about you?
At WorkRightSolutions.com.
Nice to see you again. Have a great weekend.
Same to you. Thank you.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.